when we suffer emotionally, what can we do to make it better? Avoidance, definitely not a way. So what can we do? So today, I will continue my conversation with Dr. Julia DeGangi. She will share with us some useful strategies from her book, Energy Rising, to help us learn how to deal with the emotions better. Let me introduce Dr. DeGangi again. She is a neuropsychologist and complete her residency at Harvard Medical School, Boston University School of Medicine, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. She has nearly two decades of experience studying the connection between our brains and our behaviors. She has worked with leaders at the White House Press Office, global companies, international NGOs, and the U.S. Special Forces. So she's really experienced in dealing with trauma, stress, and many other emotional disorders. I cannot wait to learn from her wisdom. Hello, Dr. DeGangi. Welcome to Deep Into Sleep podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to receive your new book.
She's a beauty. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Energy Rising. I read some chapters in it. It's really a great book. I think a lot of great guidance. So before we get started, I'm curious, how long did it take you to write this book?
Oh my God, 40 years. I'm not kidding. Like I feel like this book has been like brewing in my brain and in my soul for decades. I got the contract initially during the pandemic. So it was like almost, I don't know, I can't remember anymore, but like, I think it was like around late 2020. And then the book was published in September, just a few months ago, September, basically late 2023. So I was probably working on it, you know, conceptualizing it, writing it, editing it, re-editing it. And then if you write a book, there's all these things you never think about. Like there was someone who was going to edit it, right? That, you know, and like, obviously, you know that there's an editor, but then there was someone who's going to design a cover. Then you have to think about the title. Then you have to pick narrators. So Energy Rising is also available on Audible. So all these voice actors try out to like read your, you know, it's like, I never realized all this stuff goes into it.
Yeah. Wow. Definitely. And when I read all these strategies, I'm thinking about the same thing. Both therapists and clients should read that and follow that. And I especially like, because your background, I think you really combine neuroscience and psychology so well and explain strategies and explain certain concepts to clients in a different way. And when I read the book, I was like, oh, you know, I also sometimes know this or introduce this to clients, but not in that way. Like when you talk about name our emotions and just say it out or read our emotions, you talk about the science of the brain, which part of the brain it activates, what that means and why that is important, why that is helpful. I find that is very valuable to, I know a lot of people want to understand why before they go ahead do things.
Absolutely. And I think that's such a natural desire of the people we serve. And I think that responsibility is incumbent on us, right? Like obviously there has to be trust in the therapeutic process, but like, I think this is why psychoeducation, as we like to call it, is so important. It's like, we really need to educate people about their health and so they can make informed decisions about what's best for them. But even the rating thing, right? Like, cause I think we've all rated things like a billion times, like, oh God, another rating. Like, but emotions are created in these subcortical regions of the brain. And so emotions are very nonlinear. They can be, as we all know, they can be very, I don't like this word, but I'll say it here and I can explain why I don't like it later if it's relevant. But, you know, people love to say they're irrational. Even as I say that, I make a face. Emotions just are. Like, it's like saying breathing is irrational. The reason I don't like it is if we say they're irrational, it's like, they shouldn't be there. They're a nuisance. It's like, you would never say hunger is irrational, or it's like, I'm not here to say emotions are good or bad. I'm just here to say they're neurobiological and undeniable. So can we have a freaking intelligent conversation about them? So my point is that emotions are processed in a part of the brain that is nonlinear. It's not responsible for kind of these executive functions, these ordering and problem solving and ranking. When we rank, we really think about sort of much more prefrontal cortices are involved in this. And so when we say, for example, like we've all had this happen where something will start, like imagine somebody cuts us off in traffic, or imagine like you get your Starbucks drink order wrong, or imagine that there's an email you find out about that you were left off of it. We've all had that experience where it's like, if I sat with this, I could get some momentum behind it and really kind of keep picking at it and picking at it. And then I could really be annoyed by it. So what I'll have people do a lot of times in those moments is like, all things are not created equal. And if we don't see our bodies, our energy as precious, it's like, I'm not opening my wallet every 2 seconds and being like, here's 20 bucks, here's $5, here's $100, here's one. I'm like very judicious with my money because I value it. Why aren't we protective of our emotional energy? So if somebody cuts me off in traffic, I think I'm not going to give any energy to that shit. Not because it wasn't annoying. Maybe that person really was wrong. But why would I take precious emotional energy, which is finite? We do not have an unlimited amount of emotional energy, just like as you well know with sleep, it's like the body needs to restore, okay? So I'm going to be a really good steward of my emotional energy, and I'm going to decide powerfully when I engage with it and when I don't. So if I get cut off, like let's say I get left off an email or something that I wish that I was on for whatever reason, I can say to myself, on a scale 1 through 10, honest to God, like how important is this in my life? And if I say like in the scheme of my life, like today I got to be on your podcast, I got to lead a group. I'm running a neuroscience of relationships program right now. I got to do this. I had another podcast. I had 2 meetings with clients. I got to take my mom's in the hospital. I got to take my kid to lacrosse. I know a lot of us have days like this. I say in the scheme of my life, that is a 3. And then in that moment in time, because I put the numerical value on my emotional experience, it helps me integrate. It helps me bring logic to the emotional experience, both of which are valid, and regulate my nervous system. And I can say, I just took inventory. It was really a cost-benefit analysis. And obviously, like anything, the more we do these things, the quicker we get at them. It's not like at the beginning, when I started doing things like this, I did have to sit down with my therapist and a pad of paper. And, you know, and now, like anything, as we build capacity, we get better and better and we get more efficient and more efficient. But my point here is like, when we use the tools, many of which are available in Energy Rising, it does make a profound difference in our life.
Mm-hmm. And then through this exercise, we are building new patterns.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's very important. And when you talk, it just reminds me a lot of my clients and my own experiences. Have you noticed any examples of the, you know, how emotions are connected to neuroscience that is interesting or surprising to people?
Yeah, so I'll say this. So I think I'm going to say 2 things here. The first is that the premise of Energy Rising is really quite counterintuitive. And the premise is this: all of these horrible, horrible feelings that we keep trying to avoid, stress, anxiety, doubt, uncertainty, are not here to torment us. They're actually here to lead us to our next level of emotional power. This is an incredibly counterintuitive relationship that most people have with their emotions. Most of us think all this stress, all this uncertainty, it's weakening me. It's weakening me. And when we stay in the chronic churn with it, it does weaken us. This is true. One of the premises that I also put forth in Energy Rising is this idea of pick a more powerful pain. So the greatest myth on the planet is that there is a pain-free option. That life is not supposed to hurt. I want you to just reflect on your own experience. I want you to reflect on the experiences of other people. And I also think it's incredibly useful to look at nature. So we don't do a lot of screens in my house. It's just what we've decided for our family. But I will sometimes let my kids watch like nature shows, like National Geographic. Like, have you ever watched one of these shows? It's 7,000 degrees below zero and the penguin must walk 72 miles and throw itself into like a frigid ocean. It like ricochets off a rock. It's like bloody. It's lost a beak. It's like gotta go hunt for fish, come back, waddle back and like throw up on its little baby. It's like, okay, that is so intense. It's so, when we look around our lives at life itself, what it means to be alive is it means to endure pain. There's no glitch in the matrix. It doesn't mean there's always a mistake when we hit pain. In fact, I think the mistake is to spend all of our time trying to avoid pain and avoid pain and avoid pain. We don't do this in our physical lives, or we do, but we're not confused by it. In other words, if I never walk, if I never run, if I never lift weights, if I never go to yoga, if I never stretch, it's going to weaken the system. When we all get to God, we can have a conversation about why that's true. But when we look at the physics of our life, it seems to be true. So I think the counterintuitive thing is like, when I start to really say, there's one of two options, I can't figure out how there's no pain. So now I have before me a choice of the two pains before me, because there's always two pains. Which pain actually works to my benefit? In other words, as I say it in Energy Rising, which is the more powerful pain? So imagine, for example, I want to have a conversation with you, but I'm afraid to have the conversation with you. And so I've been avoiding it and avoiding it and avoiding it and avoiding it. Well, there's a pain in all that avoidance. I'm doubting myself. I'm still having to like sit with like my frustration with you. I'm proving to myself that I won't stand up for myself. This is all real. And the part here, and this is a really important piece, is this is chronic. It's going on and on and on and on and on. So the other option here is for me to actually have the conversation with you. Well, that's painful too, because when I go to have the conversation with you, I'm afraid you might be mad at me. I'm going to get nervous in the conversation. Maybe you'll hurt my feelings. Maybe you'll misunderstand what I'm trying to say and I'll hurt your feelings. So can you see that in both of those cases, there's two pains. One that's going to be kind of acute and one that's going to be kind of chronic. So I have got to choose in that situation what pain actually strengthens me over time. And I think that's up for each person to decide for himself or herself. But to spend our lives trying to avoid difficult emotions, I know it sounds counterintuitive, but I think that it's very healing. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yes, definitely. And I like in your conversation when you explain all this, how you actually reframe a lot of things and to help people. I can see if we use this exercise, follow your book, it can help us start doing self-talk in a different way, start interpret things in a different way. And that eventually gonna lead to, you know, some recovery journey, hopefully.
Absolutely. And the other thing I said, I was going to tell you two things. The other quick thing, I think, because you asked me what's surprising to people about emotion. When we do, so there's a paradigm that we use in neuroscience. It's called the faces paradigm. So we put people in scanners and we show them four different faces, an angry face, a happy face, a sad face, and a neutral face. Well, some really interesting research has come off the neutral faces. So there's no doubt, like all the scientists in the world who use this paradigm use the exact same faces, right? So in order for the experiment to be like a very well-validated paradigm. So there's no doubt that everyone is looking at the exact same face, but people have very different reactions to that neutral face. And the reason I like to use the neutral face as an example is like, neutral just means like, in theory, nothing. It means neither good nor bad. It just means nothing. Like, so, but some people will say the face is neutral, the face is kind, the face is fine, nothing's going on. And some people will say the face is scary, the face is threatening, the face is perturbed. So who's right? I think it is a total waste of a question. If we want to be in relationship with other people, if we want to build powerful relationships, we are required to have an appreciation on both sides, an appreciation for emotional intelligence. And that how something looks to me doesn't mean it's how it looks to you because of how our brains are processing things. And if we can't figure out how to expand to be more powerful and hold more diversity in perspectives and different reactions and different emotions, it's not going to go well for us. So when I talk about emotional power, again, it's really underpinned by, do we really want powerful relationships? Do I really want a powerful life? Do I really want to feel good in my own body? Do I really want to not get triggered by other people having a different opinion than me? Well, then we got to figure out how to strengthen our emotional power.
Yes, yes. I remember you mentioned many of these concepts in your book. Very good concept. And it's much better to hear you talk about that and link back to the book. It totally makes more sense now.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate you talking to me about it.
I think our listeners would really appreciate that too, because you, through this conversation, you really gave us hope and keep on talking about what we can do to make changes, to make things different, especially to stop avoiding. And avoidance is such a major thing we see among many people, not just for people with anxiety, which is common. They are anxious, they avoid things, they try to, you know, reduce the anxiety.
Yeah, I want to I literally have written a book on avoidance and I still avoid all the time. This is what I mean about normalizing it. It's like you asked earlier about awareness. The brain is always going to say, that's not, the problem isn't the brain going, wait, the problem is when the brain goes, wait, and then we don't have the intelligence and the power to say, okay, brain, like I heard you, like, hold on, let's think here. All day long, you know, I don't get really triggered, but you know, I'm married, I have kids, I have a busy, like, it's, life is hard. And so the idea is like, I just want to know, like, we're all avoiders because it's like the brain saying, I just want to go back to what I know. I just want to go back to what I know. I just want to go back to what I know. The problem with this is it's entirely what I know. Number one, you can't have it because life itself is going to change. You're aging, people are changing, things are moving, the world is dynamic. So again, this is idea about this holy hallucination. So, and if I have any interest in growth, if I see any value of like growing and experiencing, then I have to be willing to confront what my brain kind of maybe naturally wants to avoid and say like, hey, it's okay. It's totally normal.
Yeah. Recognize it and then change how you react to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And sounds like there's a lot of strategies about that. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you it was such a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I know there's a lot of great things in the book. Whoever are listening and watching or interested in the book should consider buying it and reading it. I really enjoy reading, even though I haven't finished it, but I really enjoy reading some of the chapters already.
Well, thank you again for checking it out. I do think it's a great book.
Yeah.
I know I'm biased, but it's good.
Yes, yes. I think it's good too, for sure. And near the end of the show, any last wisdom you want to share with all the audience and want to make sure whatever we haven't covered or whatever you want to emphasize?
No, I mean, I think that I would just, again, conclude by thanking you for doing this work you do. I think it's so powerful to have podcasts that it's just so wonderful to be able to get access to the information that you're providing. And you've had so many great guests on your show. So thank you for that. And the final piece I would really leave people with, just to kind of meditate on, reflect on, think about, is this idea, again, really this premise of energy rising, is the only value of my painful feelings, my fear, my stress, my uncertainty, my self-doubt, is the only value to just torment me? Or is it possible that there could be, because it is an energy, there's no doubt about that. We've neuroscientifically proved it. Is there a possibility that that energy could be used for good, for growth, for repair, and for expansion?
Love that. So powerful. And for my personal experience too, not only my clinical work, my personal experience, my biggest growth in life was also through some, you know, pain, through some painful events in life. Things did not go well with things. And then I find myself really start thinking and learning and become a different person. And I so appreciate that. And I think that's one way of looking at that. I also know people stuck in it for a long time and hate whatever has happened in their lives.
I know. We see that a lot too.
Yeah. So hopefully people can really read the book, use the strategies you wrote in your book to help them start facing things differently. And again, this all this power and energy expansion in themselves. Thank you so much for your work.
Thank you so much.
I had such a great time with Dr. Diganji, and I hope you do too. What strategies you find most interesting from our conversation? Please feel free to leave me a message and let me know. If you want to learn more about the strategies she mentioned, please check out the book, Energy Rising. Remember, emotional pain will help us grow. What really matters is how we are facing it. I hope you all learn something from this conversation. I'm Dr. Yi Shan. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Please feel free to subscribe our email newsletter at mindbodygarden.com/sleep. I will see you next time. Bye.
Sleep is an individual thing. We all sleep differently, and there is so much we can do to improve sleep quality. Keep hope and carry on. This podcast is for general informational purpose only and does not include the practice of medicine or other health professional services. Usage of the information we share is at the listener's own risk. And our content does not intend to be a substitute for any medical and professional services, diagnoses, and treatment. Please seek professional health services as needed.